The following presentation is brought to you by Priority One.
Okay, we're in the Chayus Halavavos Perek Gimel, Mishara Bitochen, and we're discussing some of the explanations, in the midst of the explanations, that since everything is from Hashem, and based on that, there is a tremendous ability that people have to develop this Midas HaBitochen, and the Chavis HaVovas has been elaborating on it and showing us, teaching us, and giving us insights in the development of this Midah of Bitochen, of trust in Hashem. And the question arises as to how is it that there's a lot of things that go on in this world that seem somewhat unfair. Tzadik v'raloi, there are tzadikim that suffer. There are rishoyim, wicked people that seem to have it too good. One would think that they don't deserve it that much. And there's a whole discussion of what might be the reason that these things take place if everything is so orchestrated from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he gave a number of reasons and continues. V'yesh she'i al resha anshei doiro. Sometimes a tzaddik will be suffering because of the wickedness of the people of his generation. V'yivchoneu habire yis'ale be'oini uverish uvecholoyim laharis chasidusei v'avedosei v'elukim mi'baladehem. At sometimes Hashem will test this tzaddik, and with poverty, with levels of poverty, with sickness, to show what a chosid, what an Eved Hashem he is, that despite the poverty and the illness and the sick and everything that he is suffering, he still remains loyal to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. And I think to understand this requires a bit of a broader perspective. You know, if we look at the world as a very narrow place, you know, I have my world, my life, and this is all I'm concerned about, and that's all I want to hear about, and I'm not part of a broader community. There's no global mission. There's no communal issues. Life is simple, but the reality is that we may not fully appreciate what's really going on. The truth of the matter is that Klal Yisrael is a unit, and we work as such, and we have a mission as a Klal Yisrael to bring certain understanding to ourselves as a nation, as individuals, and as a community, and to the world at large. And sometimes a lesson has to be taught to the entire world. It's not just about one person, because we're all connected. We're all responsible for one another. We're all part of a body. Some say that the Klal Yisrael, every Jew, is part of the same body. It's just like a different aver of the body. And therefore, a lesson for the world is worthy of the tzaddik to be the vehicle to bring about that lesson. And sometimes the tzaddik has to go through difficulties in life, the Chavis HaLevavos tells us, and his response will be stellar, will be amazing, will be firm in his emunah, in his bitochin, and it doesn't interfere with him in any way. He knows what it's about, and he's not shaken or shattered in any way. And this is an example to a world. When we see people that remain steadfast in their emunah, this is an answer to so many questions. And the truth of the matter is that this really is a very significant answer. We find in the capital of Mizmor Shir Yom HaShabbos, one of the famous questions about the suffering of the righteous and the seemingly well-being of the wicked people. It says, Ishbar lo yedoch silo yovnezos. A dense person, a fool, can't understand this. Bifrach reshoyim kmo esef. The wicked people seem to blossom like the grass. Vayotzitzul kol po'ele oven. All of the sinners are just having it so wonderful. Lihishom damadeyan. In this world, they're having it great. the next world, they're going to get theirs. And it seems that that's a very difficult concept to understand. And the question is, why is it so difficult? It makes a lot of sense. This world is a cheap world. It's a quick world. It's a shallow world compared to the eternity of Olam Haba. And therefore, anything given in this world is minimal compared to what could be over there. So if you give reward to a person who didn't do so well in this world, and then the punishment is more significant. If on the other hand, to a tzaddik, give punishment in this world where it's not so bad, as if everything is said and done, it's limited in time, it's limited in depth and scope, and then to reward him eternally makes a lot of sense. Why does not an Ish Bar can't understand it? Why can't anyone understand it? It's very simple. I think the answer is also simple, and that is that the questions are emotional. Any question that we have about suffering in this world, about Tzadik V'Raloi, about Rosh HaVetovla, they're not rational questions. First of all, to ask a question on Hashem, that in itself is an irrational concept. I think to understand everything he does, I have the capability, to understand everything he does. And do you think if he explained it to you that you'd get it? You know, they tell a famous story about a certain Hasidic Rebbe that someone asked him why all these things, the Holocaust and how, why does God allow this to happen? He says, you know, I don't ask him why. Because I'm afraid if I ask him why, his answer might be, come on upstairs and I'll be glad to show it to you. I'll show you the whole panorama. I'll show you that beautiful needle point, which down here just looks like threads hanging down. And he said, I'm not quite ready to go. I don't want to go yet. I don't want him to take me up there and show me. So, there's no question. Don't understand. Of course we don't understand. What's the question? It's not a rational question. And more than that, as Shlomo HaMelech says in Koheles, if it would be that the tzaddik always has it good and the rosh always has it bad, then there'd be no tzaddikim in the world. Everybody would be programmed. There'd be no bechira chofshis. What is there? Of course, you do good. Like you put your hand on the fire, you get burnt. You put your hand in the money, you pick it up. You pick up the money. Of course, what's the big deal? Anybody would do it. There's no judgment. There's no bechira. There's no challenge. There's no temptation. There's no development. No tzaddik. So it has to be that there's confusion, moral confusion. I see good that gets bad and bad that gets good, and I don't know, I can't make any sense of it, and still I'm going to do the good. And if I do good, I might end up having a lot of difficulty, as many good people have, but I'm doing good anyway. That's a bechira. That's a tzaddik. That's an act. So it's really not a rational question. It's on many levels. On many, many levels, it's not a rational question. However, the question is really emotional. It's painful. It's painful to say, Bifrach Rishoyim Kimo Yasef. This Rosha, he has it made in this world. He got a life. Obviously, he's shown the Madayad, he's going to be destroyed later on. I don't see that right now. I see the tzaddik suffering. He's going to have later, but right now, it's emotional. It's emotional. It pains. It pains. It pains. It kills to look at this suffering. That's the question. So then what's the answer? So I think the Sipunu in that kapitel explains the answer. He says at the end of the kapitel, it says, Tzadik hatomor yifroch, ki erez balvona yiske. The tzadik will blossom. Blossom, mamish, like unbelievable. Shesuli bebeis Hashem, b'chatzos planted in the beis Hashem and coming out and expanding outward. B'chatzos elikeinu yafrichu, blossoming, flourishing all the way out. Or Yenuvim b'seivo, even in his old age, the tzaddik continues to do good. There's no limitation. There's no end to the good that he does. Lehagid, that tells us ki yosher Hashem. Hashem is straight, tzuri. There's no avlus. Hashem doesn't do anything wrong. There's nothing inappropriate by the suffering that exists in the world for the tzaddik, or by the good that exists for the rosha. It seems that since the question is emotional, the answer is also emotional. And one of the emotional answers is, you know, take a look at the tzaddik. Like the Chovis Halavovah says over here, look at the tzaddik that's suffering. Hashem is testing him with Oini, Urish, different infinite levels of poverty and illness. and he stands firm in his chassidus and his avodas Elokim, nothing phases him. That tzaddik. Wow. That emotional answer, lahagid ki yosher Hashem. Now I know Hashem is straight. How do you know Hashem is straight? How'd you answer the question? The question was, the Torah says there was no question. It was emotional. I see the tzaddik suffering. When you see the greatness of the tzaddik, despite all of his suffering, that tells us that there's no question. There's nothing to think about. The tzaddik is great. The tzaddik knows. And emotionally, I have internalized an answer to a question which intellectually wasn't a question and has no intellectual answer as well. I think this is an important point that we have to recognize, that intellectually the questions don't exist, and emotionally we have to deal with these questions with emotional answers, with seeing the greatness of the great people. Also, seeing the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashgacha Pratis, you know, we know of so much tragedy that took place during the Holocaust. And sometimes it's so overwhelming that it can shake a person to the core of his being. It can bring forth such sadness and despondency, even so many years later. But what can counterbalance that emotion, and even the emotional questions which arise, how could it be, would be the positive emotions that are inspired by seeing Hashgacha Pratis. Were it to be told, and a little bit now I think it's being told more than ever before, it seems that the first generation told more about the suffering than they did about the saving and the miracles and Hashgacha Pratis. But were the stories of Hashgacha Pratis to be told about how people's lives were saved miraculously, that would counter the emotional pain of the question, because the question isn't rational, it isn't logical, it's not for us. We can't possibly, you know, ask such questions. We can't possibly hope to understand the answers, and we don't have questions on HaKadosh Baruch Hu by definition. But if the emotional pain of those questions can be understood and soothed by the power of seeing all of the Yeshua, the Hashgacha, I'll never forget a taxi driver that was telling me how angry he is and he lost his family and so forth and so on. And then I asked him, I says, how did you get out? And he tells me a story that's unbelievable, miracle upon miracle. And I say to him, I say, wow, such miracles you were privileged to see. And he says, you know, I never looked at it that way. If we look at it, we see the miracles. It's a famous story that I read once about a young boy and a girl that were left in one of the ghettos. Their parents had already been taken away, and they had to just scrounge to survive food-wise and otherwise. And he used to go out searching for food, the brother, they were teenagers, and he tells his sister, who was a very good-looking girl, and he says to her, don't go out, you know, you hide here, because if they see you, the Nazis, they'll take you away. And one time he goes out looking for food, he comes back, his sister's not there. And he knew that she wouldn't have disobeyed him, so he goes immediately to the headquarters, and he was, you know, burly officer comes out, and he says, give me back my sister, he says to him. And he looks at him like he's out of his mind, and he says, I'll give you your sister when you grow hair in the palm of your hand. And this young man opens up his hand, full of hair, the palm of his hand. The soldier, the Nazi went nuts. Take your sister here, get out of here, I don't want to see you guys again. And these people survived. What happened? Strange thing, hair just grew in the palm of his hand. No, but something no less, Hashgacha Pratis. A couple of years before, he was working as a machinist, and his hand got caught in the lathe. And they, in order to save his hand, they grafted skin from his leg onto the hand. And the doctors told him the hair will drop off, don't worry about it. And it didn't, and it stayed there. And to the one person in the world that this crazy person said, I'll give you your sister back when you grow hair in the palm of your hand. To whom was it? To probably the only individual in the world who had hair in the palm of his hand. And that's how they were saved. When we see, when we hear the Hashgachas Hashem it counters, it balances, it answers the emotional issue of how do we, how do we deal, or how do we manage to live with the realization of the suffering that goes on. Then they say, the Chovas Halvavos continues. And here the pshat is that a person who didn't, sometimes the tzaddik goes through difficulty because he didn't do enough to prevent other people in his generation from veering from Torah, from doing things that were inappropriate. In other words, and this, I think this concept needs a little bit of explanation too. We know there's a din of Arvus, that the Klal Yisrael, before they entered Eretz Yisrael, they accepted a contract, a covenant of Arvus on Har Grizim v'Har Evil. And the covenant of Arvus was that each one is responsible for one another. Each Jew is responsible for his fellow Jew. When a fellow Jew does something wrong, I bear responsibility for it. When he needs to do something right and he can't do it, I can sometimes even have responsibility to perform it for him. That's why even if I made Kiddush, I was yoitz already the Kiddush, but if my friend didn't, and he can't, I can say Kiddush for him, because I become mechuyev again in the Kiddush, midin arvus, because I'm obligated for your mitzvahs as well. And I'm obligated for a Jew that doesn't have air. And of course, the Gemara says, this is only when it was capable of stopping. When I was capable of stopping a fellow Jew from doing something wrong and I didn't, then I bear responsibility for his activity as well. So he says here that sometimes the tzaddik suffers because he didn't stand up enough against the people of his generation to stop them from doing things that were inappropriate. And he brings from Eli that the Beis Eli was cursed with poverty because they didn't stop their children from doing things that were inappropriate. And this is another reason why it could be that a tzaddik is suffering, because he's not suffering for his own sins, and he's not just suffering as an example for the people of the generation, but he's suffering because of a guilt that he has acquired for not having performed, for not having done enough to prevent others who he was capable of preventing from doing something wrong. And I think that this concept of Arvus is something that may not be well enough understood today. It's a very serious concept. It really gives us a sense of responsibility for everyone. Anyone who is in a position to help anyone, to guide anyone, to inspire someone to mitzvahs, to restrain someone from averus, and doesn't do so, if I was capable and I didn't, then I bear responsibility. And it seems that the responsibility is a serious responsibility. The Mishnah says in Shabbos, Poroso shel Rebbe Elozar ben Azaria ho yoytza birtzua shebein karneho shelo birtzuim chachomim. The poro of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would go out on Shabbos wearing something on its horns that the Chachamim felt an animal wasn't permitted to carry out on Shabbos. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, so the Gemara says, it wasn't Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's pora. It was his neighbor's. But he could have prevented it, and he didn't. It's considered as if it's his. The Mishnah doesn't say that he's also guilty, that he's guilty for not preventing. The Mishnah says, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's poro went out. It's as if he did it himself. The din of Arvus, of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebos, is so powerful that it's as if I myself had performed the act that someone else did inappropriately. If I had the ability to prevent that person from doing it, and I didn't. So that's a serious sense of responsibility. I would just say that today we probably tend to estimate to underestimate how much capability we have to inspire and to help others. You know, many people think that because people are so into the materialism of the world, and they're so into money, and they're so into pleasure, that you can't talk to them spirituality. And therefore, it's ein biyodi limchos. There's nothing I can do to prevent it. And therefore, I'm excused. The din arus doesn't apply to me because you can't get these people to stop what they're doing or to listen to reason. They're too far into what they're doing. And I would just like to suggest that maybe the opposite is true. Because the truth of the matter is, one of the silver linings, let's say, of all of the inappropriateness of our generation is that at a much younger age, so many people are just coming to the realization that there is no happiness just in fun and frolic. There is no happiness in the pursuit of pleasure. Money is not going to do it for me. And fun and thrill and just indulging in pleasure, it's not going to happen. It has to happen with meaning. I have to feel a sense of purpose. I have to feel a connection, an inspiration of spirituality. The human being needs a spiritual satisfaction in order to maintain his equilibrium and his sanity. And this realization, I believe today, teenagers are realizing it by the time they're 17, where they may not have realized it in previous generations until the time they were 70. Because today they've been there, done that, tried this, tried that, seen it all, done it all, had it all, and they ain't got nothing from the whole deal. And therefore, I think we have a unique opportunity, unique capability, and therefore unique responsibility to reach out to people because we can help them. The Yiddish neshama is infinitely receptive. The frustrations that they feel with the gashmias of this world are playing on them to want to accept more and more, to be ready, to be looking, searching for more and more. And the power of Torah is just as infinite. The power of Torah is so infinite that when we teach, we reach out, we share with them the concepts, the ideas of Torah, then these people will undoubtedly be receptive, and therefore we have a very serious responsibility. To continue. Now what about, we spoke about until now the suffering of the tzaddik, and the Chovas HaLevavos gave some sense of explanation as to why this might happen. He continues now to speak about the good that will happen to the wicked people. Why should the Rosha then sometimes have it so good? Sometimes he has earned reward, done some good things too, and he has to be rewarded for this, and Hashem will reward him in this world. Umeshalim the son of Alponov Lahavidoi, he'll pay him in this world so that in the world to come he will not be receiving as much. He's paying him in the cheaper payment world so that in the ultimate world he will get his what he deserves. The Yeshet Yalderach HaPikodin Etzloi. Sometimes the Rosha, this is also very interesting, and sometimes we see this in our generation too, sometimes the Rosha is getting his wealth for his benefit as a pikodin. He's to hold on to it, he's to watch it for somebody else. Ad sheitin lo akel yisborach ben tzadik yiyeroloi. Because Hashem figures he's giving him a lot of money and he really doesn't seem to deserve it, and he may not deserve it, but he's going to have a ben tzaddik, and we have a lot of those things happen today. And this Rosha was holding his great wealth to someday turn over to the hands of the ben tzaddik, who will be truly deserving of this, these gifts and these benefits. So that would be another reason why the Rosha would be rewarded. V'efsher, he continues, Shatia hasiba hagadol shabasibos meisav ra'osoi k'mashikos osham lebolov ra'osoi. And here he says that sometimes it's possible the good that the Rosha has will bring about his downfall. It'll actually, eventually, right now it looks like, oh, this man is riding high, everything is great, he has it made, he has so much money, he has so much everything. But sometimes the plenty and the greatness that he has can turn around, and because of that, that could be the cause of his downfall. Sometimes he says, "Ve'ef shetiyeh lahari chaburi salalo al shiosh v'yaroi lo kmo shiodat amin menashe." Sometimes he says that what Hashem does is He gives a person good, and he's awaiting that he's going to do tshuva. In other words, I'm giving it to him now, and the assumption is that he's going to turn around. Maybe if he has this is going to help him to turn around. Maybe I just know that he's going to turn around. So even though he has it now, he's getting it now, because even though he doesn't deserve it at this moment, but he is quickly going to become, or soon going to become, deservant of it. Then he continues, "V'yesh shetiyeh lechesed shekodam oviv." Sometimes there could be a kindness that it could be a chesed to his father did something, and his father is worthy of it. But his father is so worthy that he's worthy that his son should also be paid for the good that he did. The son didn't do any good, didn't deserve it, but his father did so much good, and he was worthy of being paid for the good of his son. For the good of it was worth that even his children should be paid for his good, and therefore the children now are having it good, even though the father was even though the children now are undeserving. They're only deserving in the merit of the good that the father did. I would like to, at this point, take a moment to discuss a related topic that has to do with the suffering of the righteous vis-a-vis the issue of bitochen, and I think that it's something that could be very pertinent as well. The Mishnah says that a person is not permitted to pray for something that happened already. If one walks into a city and they hear screaming, fire, they shouldn't say, "Oh, please, it shouldn't be my house." That's an inappropriate prayer, because if it is, it is. It isn't, it isn't. It's not. It's called a tefillah shov. The Gemara, that's a Mishnah. The Gemara says, "Tono Rabbonon, Maisa b'Hillel Hazokein." Hillel HaZokei walked into a city, he heard the fire engines roaring, and he said, "I'm sure this is not my house." He says, "I am confident, 100%, that this is not my house. I trust Hashem that it's not my house." And the Gemara says that's permissible and appropriate. It brings a posuk, "Mishmor olo yiro, nochalibo batuach b'Hashem." One who has trust in Hashem doesn't have to be afraid of anything. Fine. The Vilna Goyin seems to be bothered by a question. He says, "How could Hillel be sure that his house is not burning down or something is not happening there? We find tzaddikim who suffer." Question that the Chovos HaLevavos has been dealing with. How could Hillel say, "Batuach ani shein ze b'toch beisi"? And the Vilna Goyin answers that everything depends on the level of bitochen that a person has. And if a person's bitochen is super intense, that I am not relatively confident, I'm okay with the idea, I'm at peace that it most likely won't be, yeah, I'm quite certain, I'm not sure, but I'm almost, or I hope, or I think, I believe. But he says, everything depends on the level of bitochen. But he says, even the tzaddik, were he to feel that ultimate level of bitochen, and even the tzaddik wouldn't have to worry, wouldn't have to suffer any suffering. Now, of course, on our level, this is not necessarily the issue for us because we're not on such levels, but it's an important concept because the Goyin then says, this is like the Gemara in Chulin Daf Zayin. This concept of the bitochon, it depends on his level of bitochon, is like the Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin Daf Zayin tells a story of Reb Chanina ben Doisa. There was a woman that wanted to do kishuf and to kill him. She wanted to use some magical, black magic or something, and to kill him. And he says to her, Bakasha, whatever you want, you won't succeed. Ein oid milvado iksiv. There's no koyach in the world besides Hashem. Even the kishuf can't help me, even though kishuf is supposed to have machishim pamal shomaylo. It has a certain element of koyach, but ein oid milvado, no problem. So, and the Gemara says, because Reb Chanina was nofish schusei, he had such a focus, the Reb Chaim Volozhiner learns, he was so focused on Eidon Muvada, there is nothing other than Hashem, that nothing could affect him. And it seems that Eidon Muvada is really a concept, it seems from the Vilna Goyin, that's the bitochon that Hillel had. There's a bitochon that says, it doesn't start with saying, I'm sure it's not going to be my house. It starts with knowing that everything is from Hashem. And once everything is from Hashem, and He's in control of everything, so I don't seem to need such great miracles. Because there's a fire, Hashem's in control. There's a problem, Hashem's in control. So it's sort of like I become more comfortable with the situation, and it becomes easier for a person to put his trust in Hashem. So I think that the depth of this concept is a little bit maybe beyond the scope of this discussion. Maybe we should take it up at another time. I think the the important issue seems to be as follows. Now it seems from the Vilna Goyin that when we talk about avoiding the difficulties and the pain, the suffering in the life of a tzaddik, and a tzaddik wishes to avoid these things, the formula seems to be a formula of bitochen, but the source from the comparison to the Gemara of Reb Chanina ben Doisa seems to be Einod Mavadui. There is such a koyach when a person realizes there's nothing to worry about. There's no power in the world. What am I afraid of? How come I'm not trusting? Why am I concerned? It's all from Hashem. There's nothing, there's no teva, there's no danger, there's no problem. Everything comes from Hashem. That realization can transform. And again, the system, how it does it, I think is a little more complex than the scope that we have for a few minutes here. But that system is very, very critical. It's well known that the Chaim Volozhiner has a Kabbalah. It's passed down. The Brisker Rov had this Kabbalah that when there's a danger, the focus of Einoid Milvadoi, if a person keeps that focus acute and is completely aware that this is what it's all about, it's all up to Hashem. No human being has power, no danger has power, no fire has power, there exists nothing other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even his focus against the kishuf, which seems to have a certain koyach, even that is non-existent. Einoid Mavadei. And to the degree that a person can develop that level of trust is to that degree that he is truly capable of developing his bitochon in Hashem. I wanted to take a few minutes from time to time try to do this, to take this concept just a little bit broader. We mentioned in the first session the power of action. The mitzvah of Kibbutz Av and the actions that one does to respect the parents, feeding and clothing and so forth, indelibly imprint a midah of Hakaras HaTov in a person, and in that way he can learn to recognize the good and appreciate the good that people do for him. Same thing is true with the Midas HaBitochon. It needs work. It isn't just learning, reading about it. It isn't just once a week for 45 minutes, and it may not even be for daily study on our own. But it also requires actions. So many of the mitzvahs are lessons in Bitochon. Not so much in this generation, but in the previous generation. One of our chevre here, his great-grandfather, I think it was, held 82 jobs in 2 years when he came to this country at the turn of the last century. Because every Monday morning, when he hadn't come in on Shabbos, he would be fired. What a statement of Bitochon. What an exercise of Bitochon. What Rabbi Yisrael Salanter calls it, a chinuch hamusar, that I do an act, I don't go to work on Shabbos, which transforms the level of trust in Hashem, because what am I doing? I'm endangering my parnos, I'm endangering my family. Nope, I have no worry, I have no concern, I'm not going to work. And there are so many things that we can do in terms of not overdoing the hishtadlus, of not allowing ourselves to panic. Every time a person is in a situation and panics, we're undermining the midas habitochon. Every time a person might be in a difficult situation and says, I'm not gonna get bent out of shape. I'm not gonna lose control. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not gonna let it get me down. I'm gonna go about my business and not worry. That's a statement. It's an action that inspires and induces true bitochon. So I think the message is that for bitochon to really take effect, it requires a lot of in-depth learning about the concepts. In fact, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says that the in-depth learning of the halachas might help even more, or he says helps kimat yoyser, almost more than learning musar bihispailus, which is what Rabbi Yisrael advocated, reviewing again and again and again, and crystallizing and picturing. But Rabbi Yisrael emphasized the third thing, chinuch hamusar, actions that allow a person to develop the musar. I'm not going to do more hishtadlus than necessary because I don't want it to undermine my bitochon. This is not for us because we're not on that level, but I believe that it was Reb Chaim Volozhin who gave instructions to his Talmud Reb Zundel, who was the Rebbe of Reb Yisrael Salanter, that when he was in a city collecting money for the yeshiva, he says, go to two people and then sit in your hotel the rest of the time. Because if you go to too many more people, you'll undermine your midas habitochon. You'll begin to think, oh, I gotta go. Nope, what are you going? Now, of course, we have to do a lot more. We're not on that level. But a person should measure the amount of effort that I put in with what's appropriate. Am I putting in so much effort because I'm losing sight of the fact that it's up to Hashem? Or am I putting in the appropriate amount of effort and I'm ready to restrain myself from inappropriate efforts because I don't want to lose that concept of Bitochum Hashem? They say, and it's again not for us, but they say that the Alter from the Vardak used to work very much on the Midas HaBitochon, and they tell a story about one night he went to a little shack in the woods to be misbeded and to work on the Midas HaBitochon, and he took along just one candle which could last only half the night. And he wanted to work on the bitochon that he shouldn't be worried that he won't have a candle for the rest of the night. The story goes that as he finished, the candle was just about to burn out. Another candle, somebody, a hand comes in, delivers him a candle. I don't know who, what, whatever, doesn't matter. But my point being is that how they worked on bitochon. He didn't want to take two candles. He would rather strengthen his bitochon, an act of strengthening our bitochen. Acts that strengthen our bitochen. When we act in business honestly, we're strengthening our bitochen, because there's no need to cheat and to lie, because everything's up to Hashem. When we won't compromise integrity, we're learning through action and imbibing through action the midas habitochen, because there's nothing I have to worry about. It's all up to Hashem. We're not going to compromise any standard of decency or propriety in our business dealings, because everything is up to Hashem. Those are actions which indelibly imprint the bitochen. And I think the upshot of this whole discussion is that bitochen is not something that's going to come automatically. It's only going to come with a combination of studying the concepts in depth, of reviewing them again and again and again, be hispailus, trying to internalize and to visualize and to picture and to recognize the depths of these concepts, and through actions that are going to indelibly imprint this bitochen in our minds and in our hearts, and hopefully in that way we'll be able to grow in this very important leader.
Thank you for listening to this presentation brought to you by Priority One. Please visit us online at www.priority-1.org. That's priority-1.org, where you can download free audio and publications on parenting, teaching, and teens at risk. For more information or to make a donation, please visit us online or call 800-33-4EVER.